Radio Prague News.
MPs have voted to exempt all state enterprises from a contract registry meant as an anti-corruption measure. Czech parties have agreed a common position on Brexit. And the state attorney has appealed the verdicts in a case relating to the leak of classified information. The Chamber of Deputies has voted to exempt all majority state-owned enterprises from a requirement to make their deals public in a new registry of contracts. MPs from the Social Democrats, the Christian Democrats, the Communist Party and the Civic Democrats on Wednesday backed the extension of an exemption that was previously intended to apply only to the brewery Budjevitske Budvar. The motion was carried by one vote. The creation of a registry of contracts was originally perceived as an anti-corruption measure. Protecting the rights of Czech citizens in the UK and maintaining existing economic ties and export opportunities are among the Czech Republic's priorities in negotiations on the UK's exit from the EU. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka and representatives of all the Czech parliamentary parties agreed on the priorities during a meeting on Wednesday. A statement from the meeting will be attached to the Czech government's mandate for negotiations on Brexit. A newly released Amnesty International report on the state of human rights around the world says the anti-refugee and anti-migrant protests continued in the Czech Republic in the last year. Groups supporting refugees also face threats from far-right groups, the survey says. At the same time, Amnesty highlighted the Czech government's adoption of measures to address European Commission concerns on discrimination against Roma children in education. The State Attorney's Office has appealed against verdicts handed down in a case relating to the leak of information from the BIS Security Service. The State Attorney says the suspended sentences handed to former Chief Prime Ministerial aide Jana Nečasová, influential businessman Ivo Rittig and his lawyer David Michal last month were overly lenient. All three were found guilty of abusing classified BIS information. Jana Nečasová's arrest in 2013 helped bring down the government of then Prime Minister Petr Nečas, whom she later married. The Czech rock band Olympic have announced plans to mark 55 years of existence with a special concert at Prague's O2 Arena on the 9th of December. The group will be joined by a number of guests, including Marta Jandová, the daughter of leader Petr Janda. Olympic, whose first LP, Želva, came out in 1968, celebrated their 50th anniversary at the O2 Arena with the Czech National Symphony Orchestra 5 years ago. Sparta Prague have travelled to Russia for a Europa League game with Rostov on Thursday night. The Czech side have a mountain to climb after losing the home leg of the second round tie 4-0 last week. In addition, key Sparta midfielder Bocek Dočkal hasn't travelled with the squad as he's in the middle of talks over a possible move to the Chinese league. Dočkal has snatched up 6 assists in this season's Europa League. That's the most of any player in Europe's second-tier club competition. And finally, the weather. Thursday should see bright spells and rain in the Czech Republic, with temperatures of up to 12 degrees Celsius. Daytime highs later in the week are expected to fall to around 5 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby. That's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Zarová. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech Prime Minister forges a common party line over Brexit and the government extends the list of protected cultural monuments. Later on in Marketplace, Tatra truck producer seeks to expand to the civil trucks market. All that coming up, so do please stay with us. The Czech Prime Minister appears to have forged a unified front across all parliamentary parties concerning Prague's priorities when the phony war stops and the real battle begins over the shape of the deal when Britain leaves the European Union. Defending Czech citizens' rights in Britain and keeping the doors open to Czech exports are the main goals parties have agreed upon. Chris Johnson has the details.
The Czech Republic has some experience of divorce proceedings. There's the breakup of Czechoslovakia almost 25 years ago, with most people now agreeing that it was probably for the best, though many didn't think that at the time. But the proceedings can result in damage and bitterness on both sides, and that's certainly what the Czech Republic would like to avoid in the intense negotiations that will take place over the next 2 years as Britain extracts itself from the European Union. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka called heads of parliamentary parties together on Wednesday to get a common Czech position over Brexit when Prague contributes to the common EU negotiating line that will be adopted. That line should be agreed by European leaders and should direct the European Commission negotiators. Mr. Sobotka underlined the importance of that unified Czech stand.
I think that this should without doubt reinforce the position that we should have at the European Council and will give greater weight to what the Czech Republic will propose for the negotiating process.
The unified Czech line should be preserved by regular meetings of a working group composed of top party leaders. They will also be consulted on another aspect, what sort of reformed EU should emerge from this divorce. Here, agreement might not be so easy to find. And the two themes that will be central to the Czech negotiating position are defending the current rights of tens of thousands of Czechs now living and working in Britain and safeguarding its exporters' access to Britain. As a whole, Britain is now the third biggest export market for the Czech Republic, accounting for around 5% of its total sales abroad. For some sectors, such as the car market and engineering production, it's a crucial market, with the future of Czech firms and jobs in the balance if a deal keeping that market access is not achieved. Prime Minister Sobotka again.
This is not just about the fates and rights of a few million citizens in Britain and the rest of Europe, but also of those employees who are dependent for their jobs and the fact that they produce goods for or provide services between here and Britain. So it's about safeguarding jobs, not just in Britain, but also in the Czech Republic.
The British government has said that the official launch of the Brexit process should begin by the end of March. It now looks like being a very intense and complicated negotiation that might have to be compressed into as little as 18 months, given the demands of the ratification process. And the Czech Prime Minister had advice for both sides on the future negotiating table to maintain a traditional British cool.
Chris Johnson with that report. Moving on now, 15 buildings were just recently added to the list of Czech cultural monuments, including an early 20th century power station in Poděbrady and Prague's famous Lucerna Palace. The list also includes buildings from earlier periods, such as the Invalidovna complex, which featured prominently in Miloš Forman's Amadeus. Jan Wellinger spoke to the respected architectural historian Zdeněk Lukeš about the latest additions.
About two-thirds of nominated buildings are from the first half of 20th century, and this time was before, last year's ignored totally.
If I'm not mistaken, some of the sites which received the designation now were featured, for example, in the past in David Vavra's Šumná města series on architecture. This was also a period, I believe, which was of great interest to him. Poděbrady, for example. Yes.
Yes, of course. These are very important examples of architecture of first half a century. In this case, for instance, this dam and power station was created by Anton Engel, who is a famous Prague architect. For instance, creator of Davice district, urban plan of Davice district and the Victorian Square. But he was, as a young boy, a pupil of Otto Wagner, famous Viennese architect. And from that times, about 1910, this power station and the bridge and dam was created by him.
Most of the media made or put great emphasis on the fact that Palác Lucerna was included.
The most important reason of the nomination of this famous palace was that, firstly, it was a very important monument from the beginning of 20th century and one of the first multi-proposal buildings in Prague. It means buildings which were connected with many functions together, with a large hall as a space for concerts or meetings and so, and also connected with famous names in music or jazz like Louis Armstrong and many, many more others. Then there are spaces for offices, luxury apartments, shops, famous passages, of course, included, and also very popular cinema. That's why it was created something like one of the most important culture centers of Prague City. And by Václav Havel, who was a builder and grandfather of former president and dissident Václav Havel. This house is also a very important monument of modern architecture, maybe partly created by famous Oswald Polívka, one of the leading Art Nouveau architects of Prague of that period.
And if I might just ask you a quick detail about that, what are some architectural details which are, say, obvious to a more casual viewer and some that are more hidden that people should look out for if they can, the things that can be seen but they may not notice at first?
I think that in Lucerna there's a wonderful idea to create a cafe on the top of the building, on the roof of the building. It was never finished totally, and now is a chance to restore this part and to open for public, and I think this is a great idea of the family of the owners.
Mm-hmm. And the final question, what changes concretely for buildings that are added to this list? Is it a benefit?
Yes, I think mostly benefit, of course, because of course you could bring more money to restore a house which is on the list of very important monuments of city or of country, and so maybe with help of international communities and so. On the other side, of course, could also jeopardize some buildings because this care must be on the highest level and, of course, would be a problem for the owner sometimes. Mm-hmm. But mostly I hope that this is a help.
Architectural historians Zdeněk Lukeš speaking there to Jan Wellinger. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for Marketplace with Chris Johnson.
Vehicle producer Tatra is an iconic name in the Czech Republic and indeed in the world of car and truck production. The Czech company claims to be the second oldest car manufacturer in the world, with its first model, the President, being rolled out in 1897. The first truck followed a year later at the plant in Koprivnica in the far east of the country in the Moravia-Silesia region. The recent history of the company has, though, been problematic, with the firm bought out by its current Czech owners in an auction after facing bankruptcy. Tatra car production, famed in the 1940s and 50s for its revolutionary aerodynamic design, ended 20 years ago in 1997. Truck production faltered as the largely craft production sought new markets in competition with much bigger companies. But Tatra now seems to have turned the corner, with production and sales up and expected to climb even higher this year. I asked Managing Director Radek Strohal, who took over in the new post in January after previously being Economic Manager, what the latest targets are.
I think that last year was quite successful for us. In 2016 we made 1,326 vehicles in total, which is a great increase comparing to 2015. It's increased about 55%, so we are quite satisfied with the growth. Our target for this year is to grow further, so we would like to do at least 1,700 trucks. So I hope that we will meet the target, although these numbers can look maybe a little bit small comparing to foreign manufacturers of trucks, but we are not a mass producer. So we are focusing on some limited series or even single vehicles which are customized for very special customers in mining, forestry and construction industry. We do cover also fire brigades, also armed forces, because I think it is important to look also for the military sector because we have to defend, of course. Vehicles are built with quite high added value because they are customized, let's say tailor-made for our customers. The unique Tatra concept help us to achieve the highest endurance and off-road capacities on the market.
Could I ask you maybe a bit about the markets you have? I mean, traditionally, of course, Tatra was during the communist times. Obviously, the Soviet Union was a major market there, and some of the countries associated. Where are your main markets now, and where are you seeking to expand?
Now it is quite different to those times you are talking about. Now the biggest market, of course, is former Czechoslovakia for us, because if you want to export, you have to be strong on your home market, home field. You know, generally, we are talking about customers which are diversified regionally and commercially also. We delivered more than 330 trucks to India. 100 vehicles was delivered to Egypt and Jordan, 70 to Brazil. So we are really, let's say, worldwide. And we are focusing for other markets as Australia, Germany, Netherlands. Of course, still keeping some share in Russia. But the new market, which looks quite promising for us, is Norway, for example.
Well, why is that? Because, I mean, it's an established, developed market.
Yeah, we can use there our experience from Russia, from Siberia. So we have truck which is very well prepared for the weather conditions there. And, of course, in northern Norway, they need trucks which are moving mainly off-road and are fully powered. So that's the advantage of Tatra, of course.
Looking at the growth, you've had this growth last year, and you expect quite considerable growth this year. How difficult is it keeping that growth momentum, finding the workers, training them? Apparently, for some areas of the production, you're seeking women because you can't find maybe men to do the work.
Yeah, the truth is that we have advantage because we are, let's say, traditional Czech company. We are third oldest car maker in the world, so it's the biggest advantage that the brand Tatra is attractive for young people, but also for experienced workers. We are still looking for some skilled and clever workers who can work on technical departments. But, you know, now the unemployment in Czech Republic is very low, so it is quite difficult to find people also for us. But I think we are quite successful. In last year, we've been able to hire 350 new workers here in Tatra, which I think is some kind of proof that the Tatra brand is strong on the HR market. And as you said, we are looking also for the women, because I think that, let's say, some ideas that automotive producers has to hire only men, it's gone already. And we know that the women are very skilled workers as well, and there is no need to make some difference between men or women.
And how about increased subcontracting? Is that something you've looked at? Because if you can't do all the work yourself, is it an option? Or do you prefer to keep most of the production in-house, because then you can be sure of the quality, you can be sure of what's happening?
It is an option, subcontracting, but this option is very difficult to be used. The problem is not only the quality, but also the price, because we are starting to be highly productive, and our internal prices are lower than the prices of companies around us, because we have invested a lot of money to the machining and so on. So our equipment now helps us to be highly productive.
And the divide between military and civil sales, how's that looking now, and how do you expect that to develop?
According to my opinion, the military sales are quite high. We are all around 60% of military sales, and we would like to lower it, but not to lower it in a total amount, but to lower only the rate by growing of the civil market. So we are now focusing for developing of our dealer network, and we are trying to expand on new markets like Germany, Poland, and also Norway.
The military market is maybe slightly more problematic in that many national markets in Europe and the rest of the world, they're still in some ways maybe protected. There are some national champions. How difficult is it to get into some new military market?
It takes a lot of time to persuade foreign governments to buy your trucks. But we have a big advantage that the unique capacities of Tatra are well known, and also military sector is able to pay for this, because they simply need a real solid truck for off-road condition, and that's the advantage of Tatra. We are quite skilled on the military field. We know how to handle military orders. That's the advantage, and it is difficult, for sure. But I think that we are doing our best, and we are quite successful on this field. Therefore, I'm talking about, let's say, some more focus, or still heavier focus on the civil market, because I think that the Tatra Fenix is a great product for civil market as well. and we want to grow on this field more than the military sector.
Looking more generally, I mean, you've mentioned your strength in off-road vehicles, but I mean, the overall trend in the world is getting more developed, more interconnected, and maybe some of those countries that were less developed or underdeveloped, however you like to say it, are now more developed. They have roads and other transport. Is that moving against you, or is there still a strong market for off-road trucks? You mentioned Norway, of course, but maybe looking broader.
Yeah, this is quite difficult to answer, but I think that the market or the development in the world is slightly against us. But on the other hand, we are working very hard on our product, so we are looking for higher and higher profitability, not only in the rough terrain and as off-road truck, but also in mixed terrain. For example, forestry is a typical customer of us. If you mine in the forest, you need to go off-road for a few kilometers, but also you have to go on-road to some, mill or something like that. And these customers are very, satisfied with our product, because they have first numbers of Tatra Fenix, and they see that the economy is very, very good, and those trucks are quite profitable for them.
Coming back to your promotion, the Dakar Rally, you're always associated with that. How important is that as a showcase for your trucks?
First of all, it is important from marketing point of view, because everyone can see our trucks. This year we've been able to win the first part of Dakar. Then came some technical problems, but I think that next year we will be back even stronger. But what is even more important for us as a company is that we can test there. It's a testing ground for us, and if we have some new innovations, we are testing them on the Dakar trucks. And if those innovations are able to survive on Dakar, then we know that they are able to survive in, commercial conditions.
Okay, and finally, back a bit maybe to your history. Tatra was known in the past not just for trucks, but also for cars, some very revolutionary cars, actually, in the 1940s and 50s. Is there any likelihood you might go back to car production, even maybe one-off models just for promotional purposes or for specific customers? Is there any chance at all that you might go back to 20, 30 years ago and start producing cars?
I'm afraid that Tatra will not change its core business, which is now in trucks. You know, serial production of cars is a little bit of nonsense for us. Also, in past, Tatra produced cars which were very technologically advanced, and in their times, it was a beautiful car. But also, we are proud on our tradition, where we want to move further, and we know that the trucks are right now our core business. We are not looking for personal or passenger cars. But, you know, in long term, you never say never.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking more not obviously mass production, that's out of the question, but one-off models maybe for promotion or for customers who say, can you remake this model from the past or anything? That's not really possible.
The renovation of all cars is possible. It's something which we have in our mind, but restart of building new cars is closed chapter.
Tatra's General Manager Radek Strohal, ending that edition of Marketplace by Chris Johnson. And I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then send a mail to english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. And of course, you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Zerová saying thanks for joining us and take care.